Greetings, dear friends and listeners. This is Pastor Rex Cat, and what if I'm not a missionary cybernaut exploring the internet? I'm co-producing The Reverend Is In for Reverend Bookburn, live from Volta Radio most Sunday nights at 9 o'clock to 11 or so Eastern Standard Time, USA, on Volta Radio.
Welcome. The Reverend is in.
I'm ready. All right, turn off that other shit. Okay, are we ready? We need power. Thank you. I'm ready. Testes, 1, 2. The big phallic microphone is working. The weapon of ass destruction is working. And the big John Holmes porn star microphone is working. Yes, I'm ready. Start that shit. Now, good evening. This is Reverend Bookburn. The show is called The Reverend Is In, and tonight is one of our sacred annual holiday traditions. Tonight is the Halloween show, a celebration of weed and Halloween. Plus, we have all kinds of news, our support for Occupy Wall Street, lots of music. And, of course, we're going to cover weed extensively. And tonight's show is dedicated to the late Melissa Hayes, friend and book burner, known as Ginger Snaps, and her cousin, Robbie D'Arman, who passed away since the last show due to a car accident. And all kinds of shit to cover. News regarding marijuana prisoner Dana Beale and all kinds of goodies. And if I haven't mentioned it, a lot of great tunes. Now I thought, how are we going to celebrate Halloween this year at the very beginning? And the answer just came to me. We need to begin with a tune by Iggy Pop. And actually, we're going to play a couple of songs from the soundtrack of Repo Man. One by the Plugs, who were probably the most famous for recording the theme song to the New Wave Hookers film. But before the Plugs song, let's play Iggy Pop doing Repo Man. We'll be right back.
desert whispered to me, "Dad, isn't this a shame? Things will never be the same."
Hey, this is Deborah
and Keith
from the band Davey, and you're listening to Reverend Bookburn on The Reverend Is In at VoltaRadio.com.
Providing a moral support for indie bands and media since 2001.
Some people try to pick up girls, get called an asshole. This never happened to Pablo Picasso. Why, he could walk down the street, girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. Not like you. Girls that turn the color of an avocado when he drive down the street in his Eldorado. While he was only 5'3", girls could not resist his stare. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. Girls get called an asshole. This did not happen to Pablo Picasso. Why, he could walk down the street, girls could not resist his stare. Subsequently, Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. Nope.
This is Halliburton, Ernie, and it's so good to be here tonight with Reverend Bookburn and Pastor Whoremaster and John the Craptist and celebrating weed and Halloween, and it's just been so much fun watching them trying to function and get the show together. And now it is time to pay tribute to the wonderful coffee goddesses who serve coffee and breakfast, the great Greek Lacus coffee that has stimulated so much creativity and input towards the Reverend Is In shows. And it is to these coffee goddesses that this next song goes out to. It is a beautiful song by the Cooters and is entitled The Waffle House Rock.
We'll be right back. side, OJ to my right. Don't you know that omelet will blast your
heard two tracks from Articles of Faith, By This War, and American Dreams. Before that, Vic Bondi, years later, the front person and singer of Articles of Faith, did Fortunate Son, and that is from the Fortunate Son EP, which was a benefit EP in the effort to stop Bush's war in Iraq, which is supposedly ending. Before Vic Bondi, you heard Jenna Torturers doing I Touch Myself. Electric Prunes did I Had Too Much to Dream Last Night, and that was from a double compilation put out by Lenny Kaye of the Patti Smith Group entitled Nuggets, all 60s grudge punk and psychedelic bands. Before the Electric Prunes, the Cooters did the Waffle House Rock. Deborah and Keith from the band Davy did the Volta Radio Station ID and the Reverend Is In promo. Three tracks from the Repo Man soundtrack. Burning Sensations did Pablo Picasso. The Plugs did El Clavo y la Cruz. And started off with Iggy Pop doing Repo Man. This is Reverend Bookburn. The show is called The Reverend Is In. On some or most Sunday nights, depending on scheduling, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m. East Coast time, USA, at voltaradio.com, and updates always at reverendbookburn.com. We are off next Sunday night and returning in 2 weeks, which is November 6th, for the themed show entitled Occupy Wall Street Special Edition. And we decided not only to support Occupy Wall Street and Occupy now all seven continents, but also to counter the bullshit from the corporate media, and not just Fox News and that kind of extreme shit, but also the other bullshit artists that include but are not limited to CNN, Yahoo, and other bullshit artists. So it will be an alternative to the offerings of the corporate media, and it will be musical and fun. In 2 weeks, November 6th, Occupy Wall Street Special Edition. And that will be a show to remember. Thank you, everybody, who gave great feedback to the last show that we did a couple of weeks ago, Party and Orgy with Sarah Palin. And no argument from me, Lolo was a great guest, as expected. And also, the woman who claimed to be Sarah Palin was a great guest, and it was nice of her to party here and have sexual behaviors live on the show, something we always like. And speaking of that, also in November is another sacred annual holiday tradition on the show. We are going to do our annual Happy Spanksgiving show 2011, and details of that as they emerge, but there is a Spanksgiving show this year, and actually I wouldn't think of going through a November without doing it. So all of that is to come, and thank you for the feedback to the Palin show. And of course, if you missed it or want to hear it again, it is at the link at radioforall.net. And we link all the shows at reverendbookburn.com, which is auto-redirect to revbookburn.blogspot.com. Let's see, that's the next show And we have birthdays. We'll do birth before death. Happy birthday to the late Dr. Timothy Leary, who is certainly relevant to weed and the 60s and some of the most forward writing and speaking in modern times. It would have been his birthday yesterday, October 22nd. And also yesterday, happy birthday to one of the founders of the original and the real Black Panther Party, not subsequent wannabes, but the real Black Panthers of the 60s, and Temple University professor and great community organizer and humanitarian. Happy birthday, Bobby Seale. Happy birthday to friend and book burner Danielle Darko. And happy birthday to, we don't know him, but we wanted to wish him a happy birthday because it is his birthday. Happy birthday to Snoop Dogg. We have a friend, and she became a very good friend, mostly through a fascist book. And yes, even though Facebook is all kinds of fucked up with censorship and deleting and punishings and some of the most stupid fucking rules of any social networking site, it has brought us together with a lot of great people and expanded the show greatly. And one such person that it was just fantastic to have befriended was Ginger Snaps. And so we connected at least a year ago. And anyway, good friend, great politics, great articles. I often went to her site to see if there were any articles I wanted to link at reverendbookburn.com. And she loved to debate the tea psychos. So the Christian Taliban types, the anti-choice boneheads, racists, tea psychos. It seemed like they wanted to be on her page to argue with her. And she always held her ground. And, but she argued on intellect and ideas, whereas these assholes, just like to, throw out slogans and talking points from Karl Rove and the puppet masters of the tea psychos. And she was just a great person. Would have loved to have met her in person. She's on the West Coast, and we're in Philadelphia. And we found out after the last show, a couple of days later, that she was in an auto accident with her cousin, Robbie DeArmond. And Ginger Snaps' real name, Melissa Hayes, and Robbie had both passed away. And we've been trying to get support, and we raised some money for the exorbitant funeral costs. And want to continue just to support them. And tonight's show is dedicated to the memory of Melissa Hayes, known as Ginger Snaps, and Robbie DeArmond. What else is in the news? Yes, weed heads over there. We're going to talk about weed in the, when we get to it. And I wanted to comment about Libya because it was something where it's another situation where you don't want all of the tea idiots who dominate the comments after articles in the corporate media and in the daily newspapers, and kind of like giving themselves like the last word because other people just can't be bothered with it. There's exceptions to that and power to them. But if you haven't heard, the rebels in Libya found Gaddafi and snuffed him. And so there's been mixed reactions to that, mostly from the conservatives, you know, who either want to credit Bush, you know, or talk some other stupid shit. And but by and large, it's been a celebration to the end of a dictator. Was he a dictator? Yes. Was he a murderer? Yes. Was he a dickhead? Yes. Was he worse than an enormous list of murderous dictators that are known as U.S. allies, friendly to corporate business, and sweatshop owners, and death squad perpetrators? No. In fact, he didn't stand out at all compared to that kind of tyranny and brutal dictatorship. So, for a leader here to say this is the end of a dictatorship and this is the fall of a dictator, there's a tremendous credibility gap from the people who, since the Reagan days, supported the death squads of El Salvador, the fascists of Honduras, who recently retook power, and the death squads of Guatemala, and tyrants around the world who just happen to be on the right side in the struggle of corporate America to dominate and devour as much as it can possibly get its hands on. So, yes, it was a death to a dictator. No, it was not a dictator who stood out among the dictators whom they support. Okay, weed. And Halloween. We're supposed to talk about costumes before the end of the night. Weed. It's no secret. We are not only in support of medicinal access to marijuana, although we certainly are. If you've ever seen people going through chemotherapy, going through MS, going through AIDS, going through countless other serious illnesses that are effectively, I don't want to say treated, but effectively handled better and with some relief through medicinal marijuana, yes, it's a given. You know, only an asshole would stand for mandatory suffering and in access to any kind of medicine. And fuck Big Pharma and them only saying that you can only use the kinds of chemicals that they put out in their multi-billion dollar industry. Yes, we support medicinal marijuana, but not only that. We support everybody's right to use marijuana even if they don't need it medicinally. It should be fully legal, and every prisoner of weed throughout this nation should be freed immediately. That's a no-brainer. And one person has been freed. We've been talking about the Dana Beal case, and he was sentenced last month and was about to be transferred to a prison in Wisconsin and had a heart attack. And Dana is like 64 now. He's been fighting for marijuana rights and access since the 1960s, probably the greatest single contributor to such efforts in North America since the 60s. And he told them about his bad health, that he needed a couple of operations that included but were not limited to his heart. Dana's now 64, and before being transferred, he had a heart attack. He was in a coma. He's come out of that. He is currently free, and it sounds like he's completely free of the Wisconsin rap. He faces charges in Nebraska from a 2009 bust that's very similar. He's accused of transporting something like 150 pounds of weed. And those charges are still going to be met in court. And it will be fought, and he will have support from many people, including this show. And right now, though, we do have him back. He is actually online and has posted some of his story. And we will continue to link when there's a statement from him. In addition to fighting for legal marijuana and medicinal access to marijuana, he has brought the issue of Ibogaine treatment to America and actually throughout the world. And Ibogaine, which grows in African rainforests, has been an effective cure for drug addiction. As you know, we think hard drugs suck. You don't know what you're getting. Most of them suck anyway. And addictions are really fucked up, and you want to avoid them. And people who do have them have very limited kinds of treatments, all of them hard to see through, you know, before they join some kind of NA cult. And Ibogaine is a highly effective treatment, high success rate, and in countries that are less fascist and have allowed access to it, Holland comes to mind. And the Amsterdam clinics have actually effectively treated real addictions through Ibogaine, which again grows in African rainforests, and it's very mildly hallucinogenic. So it's like a milder form of mushrooms. So in addition to circumventing Big Pharma and the recovery industry, there is also a lack of pain and guilt and all that kind of shit. And if that wasn't bad enough, there's even a mild pleasure component to it, and we can't have that in this culture. So who knows if we'll ever have legal access to Ibogaine, but it is effective, and Dana is the person who has been increasing global awareness to that subject. It's good to see a documentary entitled Sex, Drugs, and Democracy, which is about Amsterdam, which not only shows the fun stuff, which it does, it shows the weed coffee houses, it shows the legal brothels where they don't have to deal with underworld types and or violent thugs. You know, they're protected, they get a health screening, and all logical and intelligent and humane stuff. You see policies, public policies made by sane and rational people. And yes, since that was made in the mid-90s, yeah, there's been right-wing goons and American-influenced politicians to want to shit can it all. But the public policies had a great impact on the culture and far less crime, even far less addiction, once they had sensible laws that treated real addicts, legalized the harmless stuff like marijuana and hashish, and legalized the brothels. And they didn't have to spend a gazillion dollars imprisoning perpetrators of nonviolent and victimless offenses. Sex, Drugs, and Democracy is must-see viewing, and we linked to that also at reverendbookburn.com. It's now watchable online, although it's fun to get the DVD with the bonus CD that comes with it of great songs. I'm talked out. We're going to get back to weed, Halloween costumes, and I don't know if we have time for this. More corporate media shit. And if we get to it, we've talked about this enough, I think, so that if we don't get to it, it's okay. But as you heard, if you've been listening to the show, we are just amazed that some people and some publications in the legalized marijuana movement have actually fell for the scams of Ron Paul and Gary Johnson and falling for their campaign. You know, I guess if David Duke of the Klan said he was for better marijuana policies, you know, there would be some shitheads who would say, oh, he's the man. But if we have time, we'll get into it again. The people who are actually falling for this shit. And no, Ron Paul is a racist. He's anti-choice. He's as pro-corporate America as Bush and the tea psychos have been, and unworthy of a single vote. Let's get back to the music. We're going to play a song for Dana Beale. This is a song where the video to the song, which is animated, actually features Dana Beale and Aaron Kay, alias the Pie Man. And funny enough, you know, running from cops and Cheney and Karl Rove and all these kinds of assholes, and is about pot by a band called Benedict Arnold and the Traitors. This tune is entitled Death Penalty for Pot.
Hey, man, it's a bummer about your cancer.
Yeah, man, like, I've been puking all night long, and it's like Marinade doesn't do a damn thing.
How about a bong, man?
Sweet, dude. Hey, man, what's with the guys with the guns?
Does anybody out there know that for the first time in American history, the U.S. Army was used in a war operation against the American people?
Yes.
Right near here, up in Humboldt County, about 200 miles north of San Francisco, right near a town called Shelter Cove, get this, 300 to 400 American GIs dressed and fully armed with the automatic rifles, armed for battle, fanned out on maneuvers through the woods, backed up by a dozen Black Hawk attack helicopters. The mountain people up there were frightened out of their wits. They thought there was a war going on, especially the ones who had soldiers kicking in the doors to their cabins and putting guns to their heads in front of their children. Why? Who was the enemy in this war? Not the communists. Not Saddam Hussein, not Earth First, or even the Spotted Owl. No, the enemy. They called out the army to put down, secretly, so as few people outside of Humboldt would get alarmed as possible. It wasn't even a person, or an army, or a terrorist group. It was a plant. The marijuana plant. And they actually did find a few for the GIs to pull up, and then they had to fly in more from the government stash so the pile would look big enough when they lit the bonfire for the network TV news cameras so they could say, yes, another triumph in the drug war. Drug war. War. The American army sent to war against the American people. And we're supposed to feel relieved and secure. And protected. Protected from what? A lot of people with more guts than I'll ever have risked their life and limb all last summer at the Earth First Redwood Summer Action up in Humboldt County. They were chaining themselves to redwoods that were three times wider than they were spread-eagled. They were 800 years old as the saws buzzed right over their heads. They stood in the dirt as the bulldozers charged them and stopped right at their toes, or people waved clubs at them, charged them with logging trucks, shotguns, you name it, all to try and save some of the last unspoiled virgin forest we have left anywhere in this country from being chopped down and made into toilet paper, TV guides, and the Weekly World News. On the other side, the loggers saying, "What about our jobs? What about our families? What about our lives? You needed wood and cardboard to make those protest signs. We need fuel. We need paper. It's almost gone. Where are we going to get more?" The answer for centuries has been right under our nose. Grow more pot. If we're serious about saving the earth, saving the ozone, and our freedom to go about saving the earth and the ozone, we should start by paying all those dirt-poor coca farmers in South America and out-of-work loggers in Fortuna and Eureka and Midwest family farmers and Rust Belt families, too, to all get together and grow more pot. Why? Get ready for this. There is a book out. It's called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. The author's name is Jack Harar. It's published by Queen of Clubs. I think there's ads for it in High Times or Normal National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. They could direct you to one, I'm sure. And in this book, among other places, it is written, "Before the 20th century, the marijuana plant provided almost all the world's paper, all the world's clothing and textiles, and almost all the world's rope. According to none other than the U.S. Department of Agriculture, you can make four times as much paper from an acre of marijuana hemp plants as you can from an acre of trees. And instead of chopping down all the redwoods in Humboldt County and turning Northern California and Oregon and Washington into Appalachia or the Sahara Desert, if you do it with hemp plants, you can just grow another crop a few months later and make more paper. at 1/4 the cost of making paper from wood pulp and only 1/5 the pollution. The ancient Romans knew this and grew it. Henry VIII made each farmer in Old England grow their share, because they knew if you want the strongest natural fiber there is, you all got to do your part for the king and grow more pot. And we did, too. Guess what Levi jeans were originally made out of? And guess what American flags used to be made out of? And guess what the early drafts of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution were written on? And if that's too unchristian for you, guess what they made Gutenberg and King James Bibles out of? Guess what you can use to power a car? Can get at least 4 times as much cellulose to make gasohol or methanol from hemp stems as he can from a corn stalk, which along with solar energy would be a great way to avoid dying for oil in Saudi Arabia. In the 20s and 30s, most American cars and farm machinery had the option of running on gas or on methanol. Most racing cars still do run on methanol. And George Washington and Thomas Jefferson grew cannabis on their plantations and smoked it, too. In the 1760s in the American colonies, you could even be jailed for not growing pot, because that was part of the key to become economically independent from Britain. Hemp was legal tender in America, a substitute for money, from 1630 clear up until the early 1800s. And hemp seeds are a great source of protein, better than soybeans. And it's cheaper than soybeans, too. Or so says the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Marijuana is legal for medical use in 34 states. Used to treat glaucoma and pain caused by cancer. You can digest more protein out of a hemp seed than a soybean seed. It's even shown some signs of being able to combat herpes. And guess what kind of a parachute Mr. Drug War Junta Man himself, George Bush, used when he bailed out of that bomber in World War II? Hemp was illegal by then, but farmers were briefly ordered to grow it again in this country for the war effort and all, and the U.S. Army had their own stash all along in the colonies in the Philippines. So, how did everything get turned around so damn bad? Doesn't it strike you as a little dumb that we burn oil and choke ourselves and chop down all our trees and ruin innocent people's lives by branding them criminals and throwing them in jails or sending them off to drug camps or taking all their property and selling it before they're brought to trial, in the process making crack and heroin cheaper and easier to get than pot? Why do we do this when we don't have to? Meanwhile, the police chief of L.A., Daryl Gates, gets front page approval for telling a U.S. Senate committee that pot smokers should be shot on sight. Because smoking pot is treason, because after all, it's illegal. Why was marijuana cracked down on? And why was it done so violently? Well, ready? In 1936, Popular Mechanics magazine hailed the invention of a new machine to process hemp, predicting that marijuana hemp would once again become the world's largest cash crop. This did not sit at all well with people like Hearst Paper Manufacturing or Kimberly-Clark or other cutthroat multinationals who happened to have large timber holdings. Didn't sit too well with tobacco barons, for obvious reasons. And it sure as hell didn't sit too well with our old buddies DuPont. Hemp processing uses only 1/5 the chemicals needed to process wood pulp, and DuPont had just patented a new wood pulp sulfide process. And DuPont's patented plastic fibers had just passed up hemp as the number 2 fiber next to cotton, and they wanted to keep it that way. And the last thing the big drug companies wanted was to lose their share of the ever-lucrative disease industry market to more affordable medicine made from marijuana or other natural ingredients because, check this out, you can't own and make money off a patent for medicine in this country unless the medicine has chemicals in it. If it's all natural ingredients, you can't patent it. Maybe that's why we don't have access to a cure for cancer or AIDS, or why the health food store I go to keeps getting harassed by federal authorities for selling herbal medicines. Meanwhile, guess who owns Congress? So, marijuana was outlawed in 1937, and they fanned the racism fires, playing the racism card just like they do when they want to crack down on rock and roll or rap or hip-hop or something like that. They said that smoking marijuana might cause you to fall under the influence of listening to jazz. I believe it was even said on the floor of Congress that marijuana had to be banned because smoking it might make a black man look at a white woman twice. And let's not forget that U.S. Treasury Department-funded documentary film called Reefer Madness. So marijuana was outlawed as devil weed in 1937. Only 53 years ago, it was legal. Need I say more on why our beloved fearless leaders go out of their way to censor our access to information so damn much? Can you imagine the mass outrage if this kind of stuff ever really got out? And people knew that this so big drug problem they keep reading about and hearing about is being caused by the government themselves? And people knew how easily each one of us individually could turn our ecological and human crisis around without resorting to Nazi bullshit like oil wars and drug wars just by saying no to George Bush? And people knew that the very companies that provide us with such crucial conveniences as Kleenex, paper towels, and junk mail have systematically and brutally rearranged every single one of our lives so that we are literally wiping our ass with our own future. And it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, I'll tell you, I do feel kind of funny saying all this because I used to be a pothead and I hate smoking the stuff. The whole low-energy stoner deadhead vibe that comes with it. But you don't need to smoke pot to realize that the real drug problem in this country is not the drugs. And we can help solve our drug problems, crime problems, environmental problems, even our racial problems, if we say no to George Bush and get together and grow more pot. Ever thought of what a sadomasochistic culture we really have? How much of our emotional pulse really revolves around pain? How many people cling to grim religions based on torture? Afraid to break the cycle out of fear of the unknown? It's so much more secure just to hate your own guts. Break down, kneel down, confess. And think of all the horrible things that are going to happen to you if you don't confess. It's a crime to open your eyes. It's a sin to look around and explore too far. Threats from above keep people whipped. Sadomasochism on a stick. And what do we talk about at parties to get attention? Pleasure? Love? We talk about pain. Like showing off the busted leg to the chums in the locker room or at the ski lodge. Or, look at all these gnarly scars I got when I wiped out on my skateboard. War wounds. Pain. The proof of purchase of adventure. I crashed and burned, therefore I am alive. When was the last time you heard someone reminisce about the orgasm they had the other day?
What kind of reaction do you think they'd get anyway? So far, I hear, or say something like that at a department store. It might be, ooh, pervert, guards, take him away. Or in the ever more uptight sectors of our more political than thou underground scene, you might get the reaction, ew, sexist. I mean, I don't agree with a lot of what hip-hop artists like Ice-T or 2 Live Crew or the Ghetto Boys have to say about women. But I do think Ice-T has an interesting point. Imagine what life would be like if we all felt relaxed enough and comfortable around each other that a person of either sex could go up to somebody else of either sex that they secretly found attractive or radiant, lovable, in need of a hug, whatever, you know, male, female, female, male, 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 female, female. Just go up and come right out and say, hey, let's get butt naked and fuck. And if the other person responded by saying, no, I don't want to, it wouldn't be such a big, tense, shattering, horrible, degrading deal because the stakes wouldn't be raised so damn high that rejection wouldn't hurt so bad that the other person couldn't just immediately say, oh, okay, that's fine, let's just be friends then. Sure would eliminate a lot of uptight, stupid games. And that, to me, is why so many artists and rap and rock musicians who deal openly with sex and sexuality are being treated as political subversives. But no, you talk about that stuff just about anywhere today. What do you want to bet that the other people around you would kind of cringe and grow a little uncomfortable, maybe smile and go, hunting frantically in the corner of their eye. Won't someone change the subject to something, anything else? It's just too taboo to talk pleasure in this arena. The person who does receives the pain of being shunned. Thus, the lesson is implanted. Fear is the teacher. Next time, think and feel in ways the others can relate to. Tales of wigging out on drugs won't make other people quite so jealous. Don't fight the current or you could be swept out to sea. Remember what sells versus what is untouchable. Avoid the hurt that comes with feeling icky. Filter your feelings through our orbit of pain.
See you. Shenanigans and hijinks that are going on right now at Volta Radio and the Reverend is in show. It is absolutely disgusting. And now they have me introducing a even more disgusting song by the Patti Smith group that they want to dedicate to all those freakos who are protesting at Occupy Wall Street from the Easter CD entitled Till Victory.
heard the Patti Smith Group doing Till Victory. Os Mutantes did Dom Ki Quixote. Jello Biafra did Grow More Pot and Lost Orgasm from his third spoken word release, I Blow Minds for a Living, on Alternative Tentacles label, alternativetentacles.com. Before Jello Biafra, you heard Corrosion of Conformity doing a Black Sabbath cover entitled Lord of This World. Peaches did Fuck or Kill, and started off with Benedict Arnold and the Traitors doing Death Penalty for Pot. This is Reverend Bookburn. The show is called The Reverend Is In. Tonight is Halloween 2011. And we're still conscious and functional. And also went through a lot of time. It's, yeah. Well, there was a lot of music. And we talked about most stuff. So, we talked about weed and the Dana Beale case, Ibogaine, the Sex, Drugs, and Democracy documentary that is a must-see, and the difference between public policies in Amsterdam that are humane and effective and the idiotic policies here that cost gazillions of dollars and cause the release of violent prisoners and thugs and rapists and pedophile priests to make room for the mandatory minimums sentenced prisoners of the war on drugs. Duh. That's genius policy making and spending. And we touched on the Ron Paul cult, and to the credit of the majority of the pro-marijuana movement, to the Occupy Wall Street and everywhere else movement, and the anti-war movement, people are not falling for that racist dipshit, Ron Paul, who is also anti-choice, a Christian supremacist, and he is as pro-corporate America as Bush, as the current T-Psycho candidates, and anybody who sees him as an agent of change really needs to think and really get informed about this guy. And it is sad that Cannabis Culture magazine and other buffoons have kind of run with blinders on, and to actually believe that he or Gary Johnson are actually people who could be taken seriously as standing up to Big Pharma, which is one of the true obstructions to changing the laws, even to even for medicinal marijuana, is naive, because they would have to stand up to their corporate masters, their corporate sponsors, the people they publicly defend and advocate for, to say, oh yes, they're going to do that, and they're going to go after, they're going to go up against corporate interests and support changing the marijuana laws because they said they would. Ron Paul, a racist since he was against the Civil Rights Voting Act, a man who's been photographed with his arms around and smiling with the most prominent of racist dirtbag leaders, a man who supports the abolition of all survival programs and environmental protection programs, and wants a whole, like, kind of Randian society, a free market corporate dominating savage inhumanity as much as any of the T-psychos want. In other words, you'll be homeless, foreclosed upon, starving in the streets, living out of a dumpster, but maybe you could still get away with smoking your little roach without the Pog army charging after you and incarcerating you. All right. God, the time fucking flew. Okay, creative costuming. Well, we've heard local book burners with a lot of good ideas. There's of course, the usual standard fare, like, you know, the French maid outfits. And, but I say, why not take creativity a little further? Why not be something that's realistic, like family values, sex negative, Christian supremacist Senator David Vitter wearing a diaper, just like he did at the DC Madam's place of business for money, something that doesn't matter to voters in Louisiana, need we say more? Or Sarah Palin on one of her scandalous nights, and we can discuss what she's wearing. But if you need help with that, you can see Larry Flint's classic, Who's Nailin' Palin, starring the incredible Palin lookalike Lisa Ann, for costume tips for doing the Palin scandal. And of course, there's more clergy scandals in the news. And you could certainly be one of those guys. Don't be a priest, because they're freakazoids and child molesters. Go after, like, the evangelicals that chase the choir girls and choir boys and hire sex workers and other people who, ironically, they fight to get laws passed that ban and criminalize them and subject them to shady underworld operations instead. Go as a scandalized Rick Perry, a scandalized Reverend Pat Robertson. He can't function, so you'd probably have to pick one of his other scandals, like him, you know, on one of his anti-gay crusades, probably because he's trying to mask some of his own experiences with Christian Taliban wannabe Ralph Reed from their Christian coalition days. Other costumes, let's see. I still like the Clockwork Orange getup of Alex and the Droogs. There was an impressive Caligula at a party the Reverend went to years ago. And the rest of the shit, I can't even read. So, thank you for writing so legibly. Anyway, so fuck Ron Paul and Gary Johnson. And I would rather play the third set of music than talk. You may have heard that REM split up, and maybe some people would say, who cares? But one, I thought they were a good band. I thought there was a lot more to them than just the big hits. And two, they had long supported many good causes and, you know, were great people as well as a good band. And so I wanted to pay my respects to the now defunct band called REM. Let's play a track from Automatic for the People. This is entitled The Sidewinders Sleep Tonight.
We'll be right back. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message. I love the fact that Reverend Bookburn is celebrating Halloween, and think the joke is very funny, and it kind of reminds me of my old partying days before I found the Lord and gave up drinking and coking and weed. And so it's kind of fun to be on this show. It gives me something to do since my carnage at the behest of Wall Street and the military contractors and Halliburton and other war profiteers. And now I think it's my turn to just retire and party and enjoy the benefits of all the rewards that Wall Street and all of my other friends around the world have afforded me. Happy Halloween 2011. I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Journeyed cross and came to land near some souls who came to death by causing strife to their own life, drinking booze and snorting meth. Old virgin, I walked up to them through pig Stygian gloom.
Gosh, gall darn. Check out our yarn about how we met our doom.
We got the captain on the lawn. The car patrolled up tight. We're feeling all right. Everybody get a drink. Everybody in the room. Fall down, go, go. Fall down, go, go. We got some barbecue chicken. Red beans in the pot. Yeah, we're grinning and picking. Looking greasy, looking hot. Everybody get a drink. Everybody in the room. Fall down. Everybody get a partner. Everybody hit the floor. Till the last one standing can't stand no more. Everybody get a drink. Somebody get a
Then next we came on fiery road to harpies, hands on hips, who pecked like wrens and hungry hens while cracking pussy whips.
Hi, y'all. This is Dr. Lauren Hall, and I want to talk about our Santa tea bagging party. People, these tea parties were not I hate Obama rallies. No, they weren't. These were to let Congress know that the people are dissatisfied with what they're doing at the moment. I get asked all the damn time why we did not protest when our dear President Bush was in office. And I tell him that we loved everything he did. Besides, someone emailed me that our dear President Bush was doing his own tea bagging in private. I guess that's in support of our efforts. Bless him. I was told that we right-wing GOP types sure seem to love our tea bags. They say that some of us even go from party to party, getting teabagged again and again and again. I have no idea what they mean, but bring the teabagging on. Hey, you all, can I secede from America? All hail teabagging. This is Dr. Laura Hoa saying keep your bags close and your baggers closer. And teabag a liberal Dem before they teabag you. Bye-bye.
Oh, shit, man! Put out a warning when you do one of those, man!
Yes, it's that very special time once again. It's time for Asshole of the Week, and we have runner-ups. It was hard to pick the winner. Well, we'll just get to it. Two runner-ups. Sunday, October 23rd, 2011. At VoltaRadio.com, ReverendBookburn.com, and RadioForAll.net. The first runner-up to Asshole of the Week is a group of people who had disrespected our friend, the late Melissa Hayes, also known as Ginger Snaps, implying falsely that she was drunk driving before her late night accident, and other disparaging things that were on a page they had set up on Facebook that was since removed. And dissing Melissa Hayes and her cousin Robbie D. Armin. And so, as a part of our statement and intent to love and support those who have survived and who have been left behind in their circles of family and friends, we want to declare that the people who set up a bogus page and disrespected them are the first runners-up to Asshole of the Week. And that leads us to the second runner-up to Asshole of the Week, and this is a juicy one. The second runner-up to Asshole of the Week is a very, very sick human, an Alan Keyes wannabe, an anti-choice man who is in deep regard with the American Christian Taliban, very high regard to them, and of course, very appealing to the tea psychos. Where's the fart sounds? We need fart sounds for Asshole of the Week, starting with Cheech from Cheech and Chong. Thank you. And a bogus plan to cut billions more taxes from the wealthiest and raise taxes for 84% of the remainder of the American people. Tonight, the second asshole of the week is Herman Cain, who is as much of a nut job as he is a purveyor of very sick and inhuman policies. And that means that we have to find an even greater recipient than the runner-ups. Someone as foul as a human can be. Tonight, Asshole of the Week is the Bank of America. The Bank of America not only tries to stop people from withdrawing their money, which has actually increased since the Occupy Wall Street protests have intensified, but are now utilizing the ugliest practices as seen in Michael Moore's incredible film, Capitalism, A Love Story, in which they want to sell trillions, not a joke, trillions of dollars worth of derivatives. And of course, if they fail, the American government and the American people would have to clean up the mess, which would be fucking impossible. But nonetheless, their scheme to further rob and bankrupt the nation, like their peers do, is still full speed ahead and needs to be stopped. And if you have a nickel in the Bank of America, please remove it immediately. Bank of America, you are assholes of the week. All right, let's end the fart sounds. You heard Ms. Terry from RadioLeft.com doing Dr. Laura Hoare, and that was the 2009 version. Before that, Dash Rip Rock did Fall Down, Go Boom. Before that, Reverend Bookburn's animation theme. Bruce Coburn did Call It Democracy. Vice Squad did We Came, We Saw. Red Cross did Love Doll Superstar. Rage Against the Machine did Kick Out the Jams. And started off with REM doing The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight. This is Reverend Bookburn. The show is called The Reverend Is In. Tonight the theme has been Halloween 2011, and it was fun. We went over time, but I wanted to get every tune and not cut anything out. And tonight's show was dedicated to the late Melissa Hayes, known as Ginger Snaps, and her cousin Robbie D. Armand. And love and support to all of her loved ones. Love and support to Occupy Wall Street. And they are the subject of the next show on November 6th in 2 weeks. Occupy Wall Street Special Edition. Special Edition, which is going to be a show to remember. And later in November, the annual Happy Spanksgiving show. Thank you to Pastor Rex Cat for uploading our shows, as even Lolo's shows as well, at Radio For All. And if all technically went well, it is very likely that you will see tonight's show at RadioForAll.net in like roughly a week. And we'll post that at ReverendBookburn.com. Write to the Reverend, Rev Bookburn, at sjcdc.org. The YouTube channel is at youtube.com/RevBookburn. On MySpace, myspace.com/ReverendBookburn. On Fascist Book, Facebook, where you cannot have the first name Rev or Reverend. It's The Rev, last name Bookburn. And on the Info tab, there is a link to Pages, the Reverend Bookburn fan site. We will be back in 2 weeks for Occupy Wall Street Special Edition. We are going to play a closing tune. Oh, and thanks to Murgatroyd Productions, DJ Cindy and Jeff, Lolo, and everybody who I forgot, which is pretty much everybody, because we're tired. and ready to play the closing tune, and our brains are oatmeal. This is from Volume 2 of the Great Benefit compilation series, Rock Against Bush. The band is called Flogging Molly, and the tune is called Drunken Lullabies. Good night.
Completely trash.
A monster hash.
We smoked some monster hash. machine.
They smoked some hash.
They smoked some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
From Frankie's personal stash.
They smoked some hash.
And they all were smashed.
A monster hash.
They smoked some monster hash. The mummy was toking on a ball. Wolfman said, don't bog off that, pass it along. The swamp thing was toasted, rolling on the floor, laughing hysterically and pleading for more. The steam was rocking as the werewolves moved to the undead reggae band's dance hall grooves. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, Frankenstein baked some Alice Beat Hopeless brownies and cakes.
We ate some monster hash.
Some monster hash. It had the graveyard smash.
We ate some hash.
And we all got trashed.
A monster hash.
We ate some monster hash. The party would have gone on till we all passed out. But just then we heard a blood-curdling shout. Watch out! Beware! Cover your necks! Dracula's got the munchies and he's totally wrecked. He smoked some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
He was completely smashed.
He smoked some hash.
That Transylvanian's trash.
A monster hash.
He smoked some monster hash. Now every night the dead rise up from the grave to partake in a happening THC rave. For you, the living, this hash was meant to. When you get to my door, just say the toys sent you.
We smoked some hash.
We'll smoke some monster hash.
Some monster hash.
And we'll all get trashed.
We'll smoke some hash.
From my personal stash.
A monster hash.
We'll smoke some monster hash.
Mmm, hash.
Easy boy, save some for daddy.
We'll be right back.
Let it fight you every time you slam the door. national guard stands around his door.
We'll be right back.
Please don't touch the displays, little boy. Oh, cute. Moving to the next aisle, we have Arachnida, the spiders, our finest collection. This friendly little devil is the Heptathelidae, unfortunately harmless. Next to him, the nasty Lycosa raptoria. His tiny fangs cause creeping ulcerations of the skin. And here, my prize, the Black Widow. Isn't she lovely and so deadly? Her kiss is 15 times as poisonous as that of the rattlesnake. You see, her venom is highly neurotoxic, which is to say that it attacks the central nervous system, causing intense pain, profuse sweating, difficulty in breathing, loss of consciousness, violent convulsions, and finally, death. You know, I think what I love the most about her is her inborn need to dominate, possess. In fact, immediately after the consummation of her marriage to the smaller and weaker male of the species, she kills and eats him. Oh, she is delicious. And I hope he was. Such power and dignity, unhampered by sentiment. If I may put forward a slice of personal philosophy, I feel that man has ruled this world as a stumbling, demented child king long enough. And as his empire crumbles, my precious Black Widow shall rise as his most fitting successor.
These words he speaks are true. We're all humanary stew. If we don't pledge allegiance to the Black Widow. The horror that he'll bring, the horror of his sting, the unholiest of kings, the Black Widow. Our minds will be his toys, and every girl and boy to be employed. The Black Widow. And his wife is devoured. He stares with a gleam, with a laugh so obscene, the virgins and the children he's deflowered. Allegiance to the Black Widow. We'll be right back.
Yeah.